Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lucas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight we return for the first episode of the 2016-2017 season. We're delighted to welcome along a first-timer as well, Gordon Duncan. Welcome along, pal.
Thank you very much for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller and all that.
Just after recording the Clyde One Super Scoreboard phone-in, this is quite a jump up in calibre, eh?
Absolutely, it's always good to have a wee warm-up act before you get down to the real business, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it's been a fairly eventful pre-season. We'll begin with the League Cup fixtures on Saturday, but Jay, I suppose the major talking point is how poor the results have been in pre-season.
Yeah, I mean, not ideal. I'm never too obsessed or too focused on the actual results themselves. There's a million reasons why you can lose a pre-season friendly. Only made two of the pre-season games, both Albion and Arbroath in the first weekend. And I think the Arbroath game is a good example of why there's no point in reading too much into it. It was a woeful, woeful game. We've lost 1-0. If you just checked, you know, your phone to see how we did against a team like Arbroath, you'd be thinking, oh my God, we lost 1-0. But the team was, you know, a very inexperienced side. We had a 15-year-old coming off the bench. So, although the results haven't been great, they've been, you know, terrible, apart from, you know, the Albion win and the Dumbarton win, and both of those weren't exactly comprehensive. So, it's been a disappointing pre-season in terms of results and in terms of building up momentum. But I'm a big advocate of not reading too much into it. Maybe we were talking about it during the week, and someone had pointed out the team that lost 4-0 to Ayr United one pre-season, and you look at that team, you know, Higden, Ojama, Humphrey, it was a great, great side, one of the best sides we've had in recent years, so I don't think you can read too much into it. Yes, it would be nice to have went out to Easter Road and get a good victory so that we were going into the game on Saturday with a lot of momentum, but it's certainly not something I'm overly concerned about.
That being said, Buster, the defeat at Arbroath was followed up by a defeat at now League 2, Cowdenbeath. The result yesterday at Easter Road, a thumping, a 4-1 defeat. It must be hard to then kind of adjust and turn on the form going into the competitive games, which start in only 6 days' time.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing, you know, the way I'm thinking. A bit like Jay as well, you know, you can't really take pre-season games into consideration, but it seems to be worrying that we, you know, again, I only managed to make the Albion Rovers game, but it seems to worry in the way we're losing goals pretty easily. I can only imagine it will be difficult to somehow, you know, step into, you know, a competitive game against, you know, the newly promoted Rangers. So it's going to be a hard first game. I don't know exactly how we're going to line up or how it's going to go, but hopefully after a few competitive games and a steady lineup, we'll start to see, you know, a better team performance and probably hopefully a better defensive performance as well for Motherwell.
Gordon, Rangers' return to the top flight's obviously got a lot of media attention and some very experienced signings, particularly the signing of Joey Barton, which has attracted a lot of focus over the summer months. It's a massive game to start off the season, isn't it? I think, personally speaking, I didn't fancy Rangers this early on in the campaign. We've got them in their first competitive game. We're not in good form. It's a slightly worrying one, considering the euphoria of beating them in the playoff game only 12 months ago.
Yeah, I think you're right on paper. The only thing that might be a saving grace is I don't think Mark Warburton is going to be treating this anywhere near as seriously as he might. He was one of the main critics about this revamp of the League Cup. He was very annoyed at what this did to his schedule. He's, as I'm sure you've noticed, his attention to detail is quite something, and he likes it the same every season, where you have three pre-season friendlies that increase in difficulty every one. On your third friendly, you play someone even better than you, and then you get into the new season, kind of tapering your pre-season that way. Of course, this has been taken away from them now. They've only played one pre-season friendly out in America. You then talk about Joey Barton. He didn't even meet up with his teammates until this morning because of that, because he wasn't in America. So, yeah, on paper, it looks like it could be a difficult afternoon for Motherwell. It remains to be seen how seriously Rangers take it and how fired up for it they are, because I think if they're right at it, then I think you're spot on. It could be a difficult afternoon going on the way, you know, Motherwell's pre-season results have been. But, again, I'm very much like the guys. I promised myself a long time ago that I would ignore pre-season results. There have been umpteen pre-seasons where we've done very well and then had a poor season on the back of that, and vice versa. So, fingers crossed.
It's an interesting one, isn't it, Jay, in terms of back, you look at the playoff game and the restricted allocation for Rangers, the circumstances were so different. There seems to be a real feeling of resentment towards Motherwell for that result in May of 2015. They'll definitely be up for it in terms of trying to get a bit of retribution. But for us, I guess it's just another meeting with Rangers, a cup tie, which even if we do fall to defeat, then we should still get through the group. We should still be in the latter stages of the League Cup. It's a bit surreal in terms of trying to work out the significance of this one game, particularly given it falls in the first game of the competition.
No, I think you've got a good point. I think in terms of the Rangers fans, obviously what Gordon says is entirely correct. You know, you don't know quite how Rangers are going to approach it on the park, but off the park, you're entirely correct. There is that sense of revenge or retribution. You've got to remember that although it's been thoroughly enjoyable these last few seasons without Rangers in the top flight, they are the same fans that have an ingrained sense of entitlement. They believe that, you know, they're the most successful club in the world. They believe that they should be, you know, doing what they want on and off the park in Scottish football. And so for us to have the utter cheek to stop them, you know, coming up, to stop, you know, halt them in this glorious rise to where they belong, you know, it's no surprise that they've got, you know, those negative feelings towards us. So I would imagine that in and around the ground, for the fans in particular, I think there will be quite a venomous atmosphere. I think that's to be expected. But you're completely correct. The way we need to approach it is to view it as one of numerous games in a revamped League Cup group stage. There's no point in pinning any great importance to the game. You're correct. It's a game against, you know, newly promoted Rangers who, on paper, are much stronger than we are. But, you know, it's one of those games. If we get a result, great. If we don't, we've got a number of games against lower league teams that we should be winning and we should be going through into the next round. So I think it's a game that Rangers fans will pin a lot more importance to than we do. But that said, it would still be fantastic. I would imagine Twist and Shout would be absolutely fantastic once again if we get into the last, you know, 5-10 minutes, two goals up.
As that is, we've talked about the significance of pre-season results, and I guess they don't really matter a jot, but you then go into the Rangers game. If you were to suffer defeat in that game, suddenly the pressure's kind of ramped up a wee bit, isn't it? Cause we're no sort of forum. We've got the games against Annan, Stranraer, East Stirling, and suddenly these are hugely important games because you've got to get the results to get through to the next stage, and maybe the fans begin to turn as well, because as we've talked about many times before, Mark McGee doesn't have the full backing of the Motherwell support. I don't think last season completely confirmed that either. So it's a pressure game for the manager as much as it is the players.
I think it's a bit weird how they've got this one, you know, the first game of the group stage, basically. You know, you think, with a wee bit of thought ahead, you would hope, that, even if it's on telly, you know, the television companies would hope that going into the last game, Motherwell v Rangers, you know, the winner maybe takes the group. You know, I thought, honestly, you know, that it'd be the last game of the group. It probably maybe, you know, with no disrespect to the other teams, it probably maybe have played into their hands a bit better for both teams if we then had games against, you know, Anne and East Stirling and Stranraer, and then played Rangers and, you know, Rangers played us. Both teams have probably worked out maybe as a wee sort of mini pre-season as well. I've got a feeling, you know, as Gordon says, Rangers don't really appear to be taking it seriously. Mark McGee's already says, you know, we won't be 100% ready for this because it's so early in the pre-season. So, you know, I've got a feeling that it's going, the whole sort of League Cup group stage is going to be sort of diluted even further as if it's taken as part of the pre-season, basically, which I honestly think it will be.
Gordon, the League Cup structure obviously is part of the kind of football manager type mentality that the SFA seem to be taking, the penalty shootout if it's a draw, and after this, it's going to be, it's almost as if someone's trying too hard to make up unique ideas and revolutionise these events, and I just can't see this really working. It seems like for more teams it's an inconvenience rather than anything else, having to play these four group games.
Yeah.
In July as well, where Motherwell have played five friendlies and now have to play four glorified friendlies before the kick-off on the 6th of August.
I can understand that logic. I suppose on the flip side of that, you give credit where credit's due, in the sense that people are calling for change all the time. They're wanting their game to try and be innovative and try new things. So in that respect, I don't think it was a bad idea to at least try. We also bang on every single year about summer football. So again, to give some sort of meaningful fixtures in July might not be the worst thing in terms of getting the crowds up. I mean, the crowd at Fir Park at the weekend should be good. I can see what you're saying. I think it all seems a bit strange to us, because as much as we like to try new things, football fans are creatures of habit, and it just seems strange, this radical revamp coming at once. However, we've watched the Euros. How dull has extra time been? So you never know, straight to penalties and stuff like that might well be the way forward. So I think there's a bit of merit in it. Is it perfect? No, of course not. I don't think anything in Scottish football is. But I would personally, it's just a personal thing, try and focus on the positives and see what it brings. I think that's all we can do.
Well, I suppose another talking point of the summer months has been the new arrivals. A great bit of business in terms of securing the future of Scott McDonald and Stephen McManus, who have been brilliant under Mark McGee. The arrival of another three players from lower leagues in England, it's worked well in previous tenures. And you look at guys like Louis Moe and Marvin Johnson, who have done fantastically well since arriving. And I think the intention will be in the next 12 months to try and move these guys on for a bit of a profit. We seem to be doing our business in the right way, Jay, and as much as there's also been chat about the finances being a bit precarious, we seem to do have money when the right player arises.
Well, I mean, it's difficult to really say. You know, none of us really know the actual budgets. It's all very well, you know, talking about the money seems to appear, but then on the flip side, by all accounts, the likes of Lasley and Hamill have perhaps taken pay cuts. You know, Pearson's left, a few other guys. You know, I'm not suggesting Josh Law was on a great wage, but that wage could cover one of the other guys coming in. So I don't know if it's quite a case of, you know, money appearing to pay for the right signing. I think, you know, it appears that we are in a position where if players leave, we can replace them, you know, with like for like almost. And I think in terms of the business we've done, I think it would be hard pushed to seriously find a Motherwell fan who would be too disappointed with what we've done so far. I think, you know, you said McDonald's, you mentioned McDonald and McManus. I think those two getting those two to remain at the club were crucial signings. Obviously, Hamill and Lasley are here for a wee bit longer. In terms of the signings themselves, I think they're exactly the type of signings that we need to be looking at. You know, lower leagues in England, it would be good. I still think that we need to do more in terms of the lower leagues in Scotland. I still think there are players, you know, at the likes of Falkirk and even below divisions. I know we were linked with the guy from Dunfermline. I can't remember his name, nor am I going to try and pronounce it from memory. But, you know, I think that in terms of the business we've done, I think, you know, it's very decent business. And we've replaced Ben Hall with an England C international, who by all accounts was gaining interest from the English Championship. Tate sounds as though he's, you know, an ideal replacement for Josh Law. And Blythe seems to have a fair bit about him. And you just have to look at the reaction from Plymouth fans regarding Carroll Hughes to see that he is obviously quite highly regarded. So, of course, on paper, it doesn't tell you everything. I'm sure on paper, when we signed Jake Taylor, we always would have thought here's a Welsh international. He must be quite good, and yet he turned out to be one of the worst players we had at the club last season. So it remains to be seen how the signings work out. But I think if you to ask any Motherwell fan, in all seriousness, if they're happy with the business we've done this far, I think most would agree that we have. And I think if we can get another central midfield player, which I think is a must, then I think we're in as good a shape going into the season as we really could be at this time.
Well, I suppose the kind of, for the positives in terms of the guys that we brought in, the departures of Ben Hall and Robbie Leach has been disappointing. It's kind of, particularly in the case of Hall, who came into the first team and performed very well, to leave after only about 20 appearances for the first team, when he was certainly a player that we believed we could develop further. It was a shame to see him go. You can understand the ambition of moving to a higher level club and obviously earning more money, but it was a hard one to take.
Yeah, I think it certainly was. I think the only difference with Ben Hall, all due respect him, his development was such that it's not like he was a mainstay of the team, a standout player for our first 11, and one which we are really going to feel in terms of on a week-to-week basis. You know, a Ben Hall-shaped hole left in the team. I don't think that was it. He came in and did well to an extent for a spell, and then went back out the team again. I know that was during the time where there was a bit of confusion over his future and so on. But I think we've certainly got able replacements there in terms of on the field. Of course, it's down the line. You look at potentially the money that we have made for him and so on. So I suppose on that front, it was disappointing. Mark McGee makes no secret of how disappointed he was. He's not happy with that at all. But yeah, I think the business we've done overall with has been good, and I think there's a lot of, you know, food for optimism there going forward.
What was your take on the reaction from Mark McGee? I noticed him in the press saying that Brighton hadn't conducted their business in the right manner. They hadn't contacted him personally. I know, being a previous manager, he perhaps believed that he had that entitlement, but do you believe that should be the case? Was it you would possibly be more informed in the whole situation than we would be?
Yeah, certainly, when I spoke to Mark McGee about it, his main gripe seemed to be with Ben Hall individually. He said that the last time he spoke to Ben Hall was the Celtic game, which we'll try and move on from very quickly, towards the end of the season, and basically said he only learned of Ben Hall's move to Brighton when he picked up the local paper in Brighton, because we know that that's where Mark McGee still has a home. And he basically said that, you know, neither Ben Hall nor his agent had been in touch with him, and he found that all a bit disappointing. You know, Mark McGee's got many critics amongst the Motherwell fans, but he's fairly honest when he gets going. You know, he wears his tart on his sleeve, and I think that touched a nerve with him, that whole situation. He wasn't happy with the way certainly Ben Hall's representatives or Ben Hall and perhaps himself went about their business, but I'm sure he'll get over it.
Bast, I suppose he does owe a certain degree to Motherwell Football Club, given that he was given his chance, he was given his debut in the first team by Mark McGee. I would go as far as saying I was disappointed to see him leave and not really repay the loyalty that was shown to him by the football club.
Yeah, I think it was disappointing that he did leave.
As people have said, though, he came in and he done well. He did what he had to do. He was never, you know, outstanding. He never really shone out. You know, he came in and he did what he had to do. Didn't really make any mistakes other than maybe one or two. But, it, you know, as has been said as well, I don't think it'll be a massive miss for us. I think, given the fact that he was, you know, what, November or something, he was virtually nowhere near the first team, and out of nowhere he came into the team, you know, settled in pretty quickly, done really well, as we says. But I think that's maybe why the club, and Mark McGee especially, probably feel a bit let down, because, you know, there was probably, if Mark McGee hadn't given him that chance, he probably wouldn't have seen him in the first team. It was just out of nowhere, so I think that's why McGee's maybe a bit upset, the fact that, you know, Ben Hall didn't even call his to say cheerio, basically.
Jay, given that we had got guys like Chrissy Cadden signed up basically just after he broke into the first team, were you a bit surprised to see that the club didn't react sooner with Ben Hall to kind of tie him down to a contract and ensure that if he was going to leave, it would be in our terms rather than on the terms of Ben Hall and his agent?
Perhaps. I mean, at the time, I probably would have went along with that. I think that the longer it dragged on, and the closer the end of the season came, whenever we spoke about it, I think we pretty much agreed that it would be good to get him tied up. But hindsight's obviously a wonderful thing. You know, we've all, you know, Gordon, you know, said there that the way the McGees reacted to it, I think that if what he says is correct, I think he's entitled to react that way. I think it's quite a poor show from a professional footballer who appears to have been advised quite badly by his agent. By all means, you know, go and sign for another player if you're out of contract. That's how contracts work. That's completely fine. But I think to show a little bit of respect and a little bit of gratitude to the club that came in handy, and I think that if you're talking about a young player who appears to be in that mindset and who appears to be quite happy to never speak to Mark McGee or anybody Motherwell again following that Celtic defeat because he's away to another club, then I really doubt whether, you know, presenting him with a contract earlier in the season would have ended up with any other result. I think if you're talking about a player who has conducted you know, his behaviour the way he has done in the last couple of months, then I don't think that offering him a deal much earlier would really have, you know, resulted in him staying here. It sounds as though the agent has been an easier, and I think the agent would have told him to stall on any deal anyway.
In the case, Gordon, of Stephen Pearson departing the club, a massive part of the squad over the last couple of seasons since he arrived under Ian Barraclough in January 2015, his assists, his goals, he was a fantastic signing and really kind of won over many of the people that questioned his return to Fir Park. It'll be a massive loss, but you've got to kind of question that given the season in India finishes in December, January time, whether he might actually return to Fir Park come the winter transfer window.
Well, Mother will certainly make a habit of inviting ex players back with open arms, so I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. Like you say, the schedule of the season in India, that's certainly what it all points to. But I think you're absolutely spot on. I thought he was a brilliant signing at times. 10 goals last season from the middle of the park. Missed a lot of that season due to injury. There's a big case to say that had he not signed towards the tail end of the previous season, would Motherwell even have made it into the playoffs? Would they have come through those playoffs without him? Who knows? Because I thought towards the tail end of that season, he played an unbelievable part. We think back to that game at Ibrox. I'm sure we've all got fond memories of that. He was absolutely outstanding, and I think he carried that through quite a lot. Funnily enough, we did have a very good spell last season when he wasn't in the team. I think at that time a lot of people worried about how we would cope without Stephen Pearson when he was out of the team with that broken rib. The results actually went very well when he wasn't in the team, but I think, like you say, overall you look at what he's contributed, and if Carol McHugh is to be the man to fill his boots, then they're big boots to fill.
Yeah, absolutely. And Buster, I suppose we'll mention Robbie Leach as well, who got a fantastic deal at Burnley. We've not really been able to see him in action very much. Scored in the the Youth Cup final from the bench, but never made an appearance for the first team. You can't really blame his ambition. It's a bit different to Ben Hall, who had got a taste of first team action. Robbie Leach has been given the opportunity, and you would have to imagine it'll be 2 or 3 years until he's even considered for the Burnley first team.
Possibly, yeah. Again, as you say, he's never been in our first team. He looked pretty decent when I seen him at the cup final, the youth cup final when he came on. Scored a fantastic goal, but that was the only time I'd ever seen him, to be honest with you. So I don't even know what type of player he was really. There's a lot of chat about whether or not we received any sort of basically financial recuperation for him, because people are suggesting that we got nothing. To be honest, I've not seen the club even mention the fact that he's away. So it's I don't know what the deal is there with that either. But you'd like to think we'd at least have got some sort of payment because he's been with the club for a couple of years. But I've not even seen the club mention the fact that he's left, to be honest with you.
I think they did briefly kind of acknowledge the fact that it signed. It was 2 or 3 weeks after the kind of deal was confirmed, or we knew about the deal. But it is quite strange. But again, I'll bring it round to Gordon, because again, you've got a wee bit more of an insider than we do. But the change in media relations officer at Fir Park as well, is that perhaps kind of stagnated some of the communication in recent weeks? I know the young boy will just be getting his feet under the table type of thing. Does that make communication slightly more difficult in the initial stages?
I don't know about that. I mean, the young guy Lewis that you're referring to is a nice guy. I actually know him, you know, in a previous life, so to speak, before he moved to Motherwell. And I think it's something that Alan and the guys behind the scenes have been looking to do for a number of years. So I think you can only look at that as being a positive step. Whether or not it'll take a bit to settle in, who knows. But I think on the case of Robbie, it is a confusing one perhaps. Because, you know, like you say, he wasn't a first-team player, wasn't a first-team member of the first-team squad. So you can perhaps understand why the club didn't make a big deal of him, you know, moving on. Having said that, I know Robbie personally. He's a great guy. He's a great wee guy. And I think the chance that he got was just far too good to turn down. Just turned 18 years of age, like you say, wasn't, you know, didn't really have a clear sight of the first team at Motherwell. I wouldn't say he wasn't enjoying his time at Motherwell, but just certain things that he didn't feel were suitable for him at that time. And when a club like Burnley come along, just promoted to the Premier League, you're just not going to turn that down. I know fans, we tend to feel a bit more kind of emotional about these things and think that, you know, maybe we should stay and try and get first team football. But I think if we're being honest, it was far too good an opportunity for him to turn down, and we certainly wish him all the best.
Yeah, with kind of looking at the ingoings and the outgoings over the summer months, Buster, would you say that we're still in need of a few more players before the kick-off of the season, or do you think we're in a pretty decent place? We've talked about the pre-season results and the fact that you can't take too much from them, but we do look a wee bit bare in places.
Yeah, I think we're still a bit short in the centre of the midfield, basically. When Pirro left, because Pirro's away, we've got even thinner in there. But other than that, you know, we've brought in a few players at the back, a couple up front, even McHugh in midfield. I think we're just missing maybe one or two players. And I think they're possibly just going to be midfielders. I don't think there's going to be anybody else to bring in and fill in anywhere else.
There should be an interesting situation developing in terms of Matt McGee saying that the boy Blythe is going to be his target man, he's the focal point of his attack, which to me suggests that Scott McDonald or Louis Moult are going to miss out, which is quite a drastic decision given how pivotal they were to keeping us in the league last season, never mind finishing the top six, yeah.
Well, I've not heard or read his comments. I mean, you know, for me, those are two different things. Target man, yeah, it's great to have a target man. You know, whether it's you're going into a game where you're going to know before the game it's going to be a physical game and you're going to be playing balls into the box, then you perhaps start with a target man, or it's a good option to have to come on for, say, the last 10 minutes to pump the ball along. But the focal point of your attack, of course, as you say, alludes to something a wee bit concrete, a wee bit more regular. As I said earlier, all the signings look good in paper, but how they actually perform on a Saturday remains to be seen. So I don't think it's wise to assume that Blyth is going to be at, leading the line week in, week out the coming season. Anything could happen. But it is an interesting one. It's interesting that, I'm only really going on what you've said. Again, I've not read or heard the comments, but if that is what he has suggested, then it's an interesting claim to make this early in the season, particularly when you have just extended the contract of a top class player in Scott McDonald. You've got Louis Moult, the top goal scorer there. It's interesting. I mean, again, there's talk today, I think, about QPR being linked with Johnson. Perhaps he sees, his front three being Moult, McDonald and Blythe in some sort of strange forward line. There's still a lot of questions. I wouldn't read too much into the idea that Blythe is going to be in the team sheet week in, week out. I think that perhaps it is, putting pressure or expectations on him to perform or creating a bit of competition between all the strikers we've got. I'm not sure, but I'd be quite surprised if Moult and McDonald aren't on part more than they're off at this season.
Gordon, the situation with Scott McDonald took a while to be resolved. It looked like very much he was set for Hibs. The Neil Lennon certainly thought he was set for Hibs as well, given his backlash to the whole saga that went on, but kind of like Stephen Pearson, a massive player for the team over the last year or so, and brilliant bit of business to get him tied down to another year at the club.
Yeah, it's a real shame that Neil Lennon wasn't at Easter Road yesterday. He was away on punditry duty at the Euros. It would have been interesting to see him and Scott McDonald, see if they had a couple of words, or if they've kissed and made up. But he certainly was not happy at all at Scott McDonald's decision to stay at Fir Park, and that probably speaks volumes for how good a player Scott McDonald is. On the day that he re-signed, Mark McGee said very clearly in the press that he believed Scott McDonald was one of the best players in the league. So that perhaps answers a couple of your questions at once there. I also don't think there's any chance that Scott McDonald isn't going to be part of Motherwell's front three next season. And like you say, yeah, a brilliant bit of business. I think most clubs, the vast majority of clubs in the top flight, would bite their hand off for Scott McDonald. So yeah, but it's great that he's staying at Fir Park.
Just like Jay says as well, I've never actually heard McGee say that either. I must have missed that. But I think if there is going to be a chance that he is implicating it, Blythe is going to be his, in the team basically, I think it's going to be because we're trying to get rid of Johnson. Not trying to get rid of him, obviously, in that sense, but I don't think it's any secret that we're looking to sell players on. And Johnson, as Jay says as well, it was BBC Sport rumours I read on, so take that with a pinch of salt. But I did read that QPR were apparently looking at it as well. So I think maybe if that's what he said, he's maybe meaning Johnson will be the one missing it because he's away elsewhere, rather than Moult or McDonald not getting a game.
I know the focus has been on kind of arrivals and outgoings, but another one that was mentioned was Lionel Ainsworth, who looked to be on his way. He's now been featured in pre-season games. The talk of Marvin Johnson perhaps moving on. It'll be interesting to see how that one pans out as well. Would you keep Ainsworth as a backup? He seems quite unsettled towards the end of the season. His confidence was completely short. He's had so many ups and downs in his short time at Motherwell. I don't know whether the time is approaching that we should kind of move on from Ainsworth. I'm not sure.
I was going to say it's a real strange one, because I'm always a bit sceptical about looking at players' stats too much. But if you look at the goals and assists that Lionel Ainsworth has contributed whilst being at Motherwell, I think two seasons in a row, double figures for goals and assists. That's incredible. That is not easy to come by.
Yeah.
It makes what's happened to him in the last few months really bizarre. But of course, when the team's winning like they were towards the tail end of last season, no one really cares. Are you asking if he's good enough to play for Motherwell? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that he necessarily fits, and whether it's a case of getting the best out of him, whether Mark McGee can do that. I was there the night at Fir Hill when he came on and was very much blamed for the goal that Motherwell lost. he ended up coming up to speak to the press in tears. And I felt for him so much because he's a really good guy. He's a really nice guy. And he is a terrific player. Who knows whether you can get that out of him week in, week out, though.
I think that's... I think you've basically covered there, but I think one of the things, the key things you said there was whether or not he fits. I don't think McGee thinks he can fit him into his system. You know, people can say all they want, he can fill in for Johnson, but I think they're slightly different types of players. I just don't think that McGee thinks that that Lionel Ainsworth can do a job in a job in that 4-3-3.
I think that's the thing, though. You've got to kind of consider a Motherwell without Marvin Johnson to accommodate Lionel Ainsworth. I don't think that a squad with two out-and-out wingers who are brilliant and frustrating in equal measures works out. I think that the only future I could see for Lionel Ainsworth at Fir Park is without Marvin Johnson being there.
But I don't even think...
I was just going to say, I think a lot also, it sounds obvious, a lot hinges on Ainsworth saying, what does he want to do at this stage in his career? I think that at the moment, he would be seen as nothing more than an impact sub. And if he is happy with that, which, you know, you would, on the one hand, you would maybe say 28-year-olds, he obviously want to be playing week in, week out. On the other hand, he has been a bit of a nomad in terms of clubs. He does seem to be settled in Motherwell. Is he prepared to be an impact sub from the bench and work hard to get in the team? I certainly don't think that he is going to be a first pick in the coming season, but you know, I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with Ainsworth to the point where I'm probably a bit of a hypocrite at times. I remember when we did the podcast after Dens Park, the debacle at Dens Park last season, or the season, was it season before even, and you know, I was doing that terrible cliche of offering to drive him down the road, and yet after Ibrox, you know, he was an absolute hero. So I'm more than happy to keep Ainsworth at Fir Park, but you know, the ball's in his court. At the end of the day, he's not going to walk into the team, particularly if Johnson's still in it. He needs to realise that he's on the bench, and if he wants to play in the team, he needs to put the effort in. But I would like to give him the opportunity to do so, because I think he's earned it. I think he's had games where he barely plays, and he barely turns up, and he's one of those kind of wingers where some games just completely pass him by, to the extent where at times he doesn't look interested in. But I think that, you know, as Gordon touched upon, the assists, the goals, you know, the moments he's given us in a Motherwell jersey, I think have earned him the right to at least be given, you know, 6 months to earn a place in the Portuguese team this year.
Gordon brought up something that I think is maybe overlooked at times, the incident at Fir Hill, and you were very vocal about it, Jay, in the way that all the blame was placed very much at the door of Lionel Ainsworth, and what was a shocking performance. It was a terrible, terrible game that night. He's never really recovered since then.
Well, I mean, very possibly. I mean, again, it's quite difficult to tell a player like Ainsworth, because he does seem to be, you know, consistently inconsistent. He does seem to be up and down. So it's very difficult to kind of pinpoint what it is that makes him, you know, play well and what puts him off his game. But I tend to agree with that. You know, we were obviously there that night. It was a really, really poor performance. Yes, it was a mistake by Ainsworth, but, you know, I said at the time, and I still believe, that the way he was hung out to dry wasn't acceptable from a football team. At the end of the day, everybody's talking about how ridiculous it was yesterday, the way Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, it's all about him. Yeah, it was a team that won the tournament. Everybody is quick to kind of, you know, point out that the way that Ronaldo was bouncing about in the touchline and how everything revolves around him, when it was a team that won the trophy last night. And that's the point. You know, you win and lose as a team, and the way in which you know, certain personnel at the club treated Lionel Ainsworth that night, I thought, was really, really poor. And you may be correct. I think that players, you get players who are confidence players, you get others who are, you know, gallant and arrogant enough that doesn't really come into it. I think Ainsworth very much is a confidence player, and I think that it's one thing to have a poor game or to get, you know, an absolute roasting in the dressing room that affects your confidence, but I think to be completely hung out to dry, I mean, that could shatter the confidence of some of the, you know, the strongest footballers out there. So I'm not surprised. Again, I wouldn't want to commit to what you're saying. I think there's a few reasons that Rosine actually is quite inconsistent, but I think there's very much an argument to be made that he has suffered quite a lot since that game.
We've introduced a new feature where we, every week we'll put up in social media a wee talking point around the club, and this week's is particularly topical given the introduction of the new strips, and yet again the whole 1991 team features quite heavily. We've had tribute games, we've had scarves, we've had various replica jerseys. It seems to be very much something that the club drags up at an all too regular occasion for me personally, but we've had various replies over the last couple of days, Jay, and I don't know if you'd be able to take us through them just now and also give a wee bit of your own thoughts on the whole situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we'll get, you know, Buster and Gordon's thoughts on it as well too. But as you said, it was, you know, is it time to stop celebrating? 25 years, fair enough. You know, you mark anniversaries. It's what we do as a society. You had the, you know, the 100 year of the Battle of the Somme not too long ago. You know, it's perfectly acceptable to do. But I think that, you know, my own personal opinions would be that when you're having two or three events and a DVD and a third kit that has players' names on it, you are starting to rip the arse out of it a wee bit. Interestingly, I actually thought that view would maybe be in the minority, but from the replies we've got, it seems that it certainly isn't. I'll start with someone who actually does think that we should continue to celebrate it. Arte Monte said on Facebook, "No chance, it was the greatest Scottish Cup final in history. Our two brothers led out their teams and the mighty well won." But the rest of the replies seem to be kind of subscribing to a similar theme. Ian Buchanan, who obviously, you know, whether it's a Remember Well question or this new thing, he has to always be involved.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah, we're grateful to him for being involved every week. He says, "It's time to move on to more recent triumphs. Beating Rangers 6-1 has some milking potential, if not for the club, certainly for the fans." Gordon and Wendy Quinn said, "One of the greatest days of my life, watching the boys in Claret and Amber lift the cup. We need to move on. Don't want to be in the same boat as the 1966 mob." David Cullinan said, "We should stop talking about it, but this year is the 25th anniversary, so it works. After this, though, we should calm down a bit." Over in Twitter, there was some more replies. Craig Hargreave said, "It depends what's been celebrated. It was a great game of football. Those involved deserve to continue to be acknowledged. But some self-awareness would be good. By all means, acknowledge heritage. Last season's shirts are well on to the 70s, the 91 final still seems to overshadow, and to continually reference it isn't that heavy. 25th anniversary is worth acknowledging, and I enjoy the DVD. Equally though, it's as much history as the 52 Cup win and the 32 League win." Damon McLaughlin said, "We should be looking at teams like ICT, Inverness, Galway Thistle, Ross County, St Mirren's, Johnson, Kelly, all have recent success, and we have to look back 25 years in 91. In 1991, it was unusual for non-Old Firm clubs and the Dons and United to win a cup, so it was rightly lauded, but in recent years it's become common. We should be proud of that squad, and they are all club legends, but it highlights how rubbish we've been in cups in recent years. It's all a wee bit Celtic 67 and England 66 for me now." Interestingly, that's two folk, you know, going for the England 1966 reference, which obviously is a negative one. Craig said, "As Ali Maxwell said in the podcast, it's time for new heroes." And two more. William Kay said, "Yes, a recently released white third kit confirmed that we need to move on as it's starting to become embarrassing." And Jim Allen said, "We've got to move on, or else we'll become a laughing stock." So, you know, I don't know what the feeling is for Buster and Gordon in this one.
I think that somewhere in there, you've pretty much covered everything. I would pick out wee bits from all the contributors there. I understand the sentiment of wanting to move on and whatever, but I would stop well short of calling it unhealthy or anything like that. I really don't think it matters that much when all's said and done. But, you know, since you're asking the question, I think then, you know, some of the other contributors have pointed out that I think the best way to get around it is to go and win something, go and achieve something, and you create new heroes or whatever it may be. That is the best way. That's clearly the best way to do it. I think there is an added intrigue there because of how it was won, because it was such a spectacular final and all the other points of interest that surround it. I think that's what's made it just slightly more memorable in Scottish football than some of the other cup wins. But I mean, yeah, perhaps it is time to move on. Maybe just a personal thing. It's just something I could never be that upset about. It doesn't really concern me all that much.
I'm very similar, to be fair. I think, as people have said there as well, you know, it's the 25th anniversary. so it probably does deserve pointing out. I don't mind the white strip either, to be honest with you. I actually quite like the look of it. If we were a team who had constantly won things in the past and we were still holding on to this 25 years later, fair enough. But the fact of the matter is we're not. You know, we've won it twice, won the league once. So it's something which obviously it was within all our lifetimes. Sorry, Gordon, I don't know what age you are. I'm just going to assume you're
just
fair enough. So there you go. It was within all our lifetimes. So it's you know, a memory worth holding on to, at least. And as you says, it's maybe we getting a bit overkill now. And because it is 25 years down the line, it's probably time just to sort of let it slide now. And, you know, as somebody pointed out, as Gordon said as well, as Ali Maxwell says, the only way to get rid of that is to win it again.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, it's certainly not something I feel particularly passionate about. At the end of the day, if you don't want to buy the DVD, don't buy it. If you don't want to go to the events, don't go to them. I think the only issue for me is the fact that, and we see it a lot, you know, if you go into the likes of Pye and Bovril, and up until obviously May there, the abuse and the ridicule that Hibs fans used to get because it was so long since they last won the Scottish Cup. I think there's a fine balance between celebrating what is a really great achievement and then sort of going over the line into really reinforcing how poor you've been since then. And I think that's the issue for me. It's not, yes, the Scottish Cup is a fantastic tournament with a lot of history, but it's not an impossible task to win it. It's certainly not, you know, we've seen teams, you know, in the final, you know, Gretna in recent years. I mean, it's not a massive, you know, this great, glorious, once-in-a-lifetime achievement. And I think the more you celebrate it, the further away you get from it. You actually go from celebrating what is a good achievement into actually kind of just highlighting how good you've been since then. And I think that's the kind of mindset I'd like to see us getting out of. Let us, you know, perhaps not, you know, embroidering the names of the team that won 3-1 at Ibrox onto the jersey for next year, as Bukes might have suggested. But I think that it might be time to kind of accept that it was a great achievement, but the longer time goes on, the more we should be concerned about why we're not winning, you know, silverware. We don't need to win silverware every season, of course. That's not why we're Motherwell fans. None of us would be Motherwell fans if it was about the silverware. But, you know, it just, to me, it reinforces how poor we've been, particularly in cup competition since. And I think that's why it starts to get a bit great.
Well, all you have to do is, my dad was born in December 1952. So that's the only thing we've won in his lifetime. You know, it's not as if we're awash with trophies or anything. It is well worth remembering. But as you said, it's maybe time to start winning it slightly. And I just hope for something else to celebrate soon.
Putting another stance on it, though, it is nice to see that we've got a new kind of title sponsor for our jerseys. It was a wee bit of a drawn-out process getting the strips on. I think it was Marty that mentioned the other day that we were the last team to kind of put our new strips on sale, which matters very little to myself, I must confess, but you kind of think that there was maybe a wee trick missed in terms of kids finishing up for the summer holidays and not being able to buy a new strip and wear it on their holiday. But revenue coming into the club is obviously a very important thing, and Cash Converters in Motherwell Town Centre certainly has shut down, so to secure a new source of income is very important and pleasing to see as well.
Yeah, I think Motorpoint have been backing the club quite well even before this. I know towards the end of last season, the club were conducting some of their press events actually in the showroom, so to speak, you know, rather than the press room.
Yeah, actually, I saw that before the Celtic game, yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, it's going to, I'm about to perhaps break the number one rule of broadcasting, depending when this is going out, but tomorrow or today or whatever day you're going to use the podcast, tomorrow,
Wednesday.
Louis Bolt is going to. forget that yesterday. Louis Moult is going to be speaking at Motorpoint this week as well, again, part of the partnership there. I don't know what you guys think about the whole situation with the sponsor being on the front. I know traditionalists very much like the fact that the strip perhaps looks better without the sponsor being on, because we know the replica is not going to have that. But I think back to when I was a kid, and I suppose that's the market we're aiming at. I just wanted to look exactly like the players on the field, so I don't know. Well, do you guys think that's a good thing?
Yeah.
No, I definitely agree with that. I was slightly torn in that. I think that it looks better. You know, it's more aesthetically pleasing with the sponsor, but it's no longer a replica jersey by any definition. I think,
especially the white one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh no, absolutely. I think as soon as you take the sponsor away, there's something about a a £20 retro jersey about it, or a £15 training top feel about it. I think that for me in particular, I completely agree with that. I think that when you were a kid, you wanted to look exactly like the players did on the park, and I think that as much as I think that, as I said, the strip without the sponsor, the home one in particular, I think looks fantastic without it. But for me, I think that, if you're going to sell a replica jersey, it should be a replica, which is not without the sponsor.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. But I think that when I was younger, if I had to get my mother on top with it, Ian Skelly wrote across the face. I don't think I would have been too pleased, to be fair, either. I think part of the whole, everybody enjoying the fact there's not a spot for... The first time it happened was a couple of years ago when it was it Cash Converters at the time? But, I think it's to do with, it's a bit, it doesn't bother me, but I've seen people try to demuddle a bit of slagging because they had a Cash Converters across the front of their tap. And that may play into people's minds. Whereas Motorpoint, I'll be honest with you, I don't even know what they are. I assume they sell motors. There you go. But, there's nothing really that way. Having a car showroom or whatever across the front of your top, whereas Cash Converters could have been considered a bit already for some people. I don't know why they've decided not to sell it with the... Well, I think they've got an option, haven't they, with or without it. I don't know why that's even become an option, but fair enough, I suppose.
No, I suppose the good thing about it is that those that want a sponsor on their jersey can have it, and those that believe that it's better off without it can choose that option as well. I assume there's been quite a lot of the Macron products that I've purchased myself, that the sponsor's fallen off, the labels and the shoulders have fallen off. So maybe it's just a kind of logistical thing as well, where it saves both time, money, and also problems with the sponsors ripping off the shirts and having to be changed over on a regular occasion.
But what I was more upset about is they look as if they're for skinny people again. I mean, come on, give us fatties a chance.
It's to stop the fat podcast geeks wearing football jerseys.
Towards the end of last season, maybe even after the season finished, I was going to Portugal, and I decided I'd go into the shop and buy the replica top for last season because it was only £20 or something. And I got it delivered. I didn't go into the shop, so I got it delivered. But see, when I tried to put it on, it looked as if somebody had painted it on me. I mean, it was an extra large. Come on, geez, a brick.
To be perfectly fair, you should have definitely walked or driven down to the shop, considering you only live in Bells Hill. That's possibly the reason that top didn't fit you.
No, it's because it was a wee tiny stupid thing for skinny folk. I mean, that's fine, I've learned my lesson, I'll go into the shop now. But, as I say, I was disappointed there that the world panders to the skinny.
Right, okay.
On that bombshell.
We'll finish up by just basically kind of discussing our hopes for the coming season. I know we're only at the start of July. It's hard to know if there's other players going to come in or what's going to develop in the coming weeks. But given that we start competitive football on Saturday, I guess it's about time for predictions. Speaking personally, I'd be quite happy with a repeat of last season. In the latter end of it, certainly, where we were winning more often than not at home. We did struggle away from home at times, comfortably avoided the battle for the playoffs, finished in the top six. I don't even know if I would extend my hopes as far as finishing the top six this season, but certainly avoiding relegation would be my key aim for the season, and basically not having any sort of heart attack material that transpired the previous year.
I think once you finish in the top six like we did last season, you probably just look to repeat that. Looking at the table or the teams in the league, there's going to be probably eight teams vying for two spots really in the top six, and everyone will think they can do it because they'll look at Motherwell over the last few years, they'll look at St Johnstone who consistently do it, Ross County did it, Inverness, so all those kind of smaller clubs, if you can use that word, will all at least hope they can finish in the top six. I know everyone's got various opinions on where Rangers will finish. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that they're certainly going to be well within the top six. So that is obviously one less spot up for grabs as far as I'm concerned. And I think if you can sneak into the top six, and hate to go back to it, it's the same every season, a cup run, then you're absolutely, you know, you can count that as a successful campaign.
I think that if we continue the way we finished last year, maybe not after the split, but before the split, I've said it before and I'll say it again, MD in this league can beat MD, you know, barring maybe Rangers and Celtic, well, Rangers now maybe, and Celtic, you know, once they start plucking the best for the other teams and spending the wee bit of cash that they've got, they'll run away with it. But MD Elsa, I think, can beat MD Elsa on their day, and if we can put two or three good wee runs together, hopefully we're looking at another top six. And as Gordon says there as well, you know, anything, two or three games in each cup and you're jamming.
I'll take second.
Well, I suppose we've definitely got the four games in the League Cup, I suppose.
I think everybody's kind of got the same process here. I think to finish sixth, when you look at the teams that are in the league next season, I think would be a fantastic achievement. The cup draw is, again, you know, we've just touched upon the fact that we're celebrating the 25th anniversary because we've been so far in the cup. So it's perhaps, you know, you don't want to get too excited, but when the cup draws come, you know, you do get that kind of romanticism and things like that. So it'd be great to do something in the cup. So yeah, I think to just be comfortably above the relegation zone, and just see what happens elsewhere from that. That would be, I think, ideal.
I think so as well, especially seeing as how we don't really know, you know, what's happening with the club in general, whether it's, you know, how the finances are, the Well Trust, you know, this, not the Well Trust site, sorry, the society. You know,
that's honestly the longest we've ever done a podcast without mentioning the Well Society. Well done, guys.
Almost got to the end. I forgot the name. We hadn't spoken about them that long. You know, I think as Jay says there, comfortable clear of relegation, and as you say, hopefully a wee cup run, that'd be fine.
In terms of keys to our success, who would you say the standout guys are likely to be over the course of the season?
I think, well, obviously at the moment you can only really go on what we saw last year. Louis Moult's goals were fantastic. What was it, 18 or so? I think he ended up maybe fourth top scorer in the league, something like that. If you can get that out of him again, I think fantastic. You always look at the experienced guys as well, the sort of maybe more unsung heroes that undoubtedly keep us ticking along. But I don't know about you guys, but I was growing up, I just wanted to see goals getting scored. So when Marvin Johnson's in full flow and when Scott McDonald's up there and Louis Moult's banging the goals in, I think that's when most Mullow fans will be off their seats. So I like to think that front three can be the, you know, the trio that brings success this season.
I think that's right, basically. That's the only thing we can be really sure about at the moment. You know, the midfield's pretty bare, as we mentioned. I don't know how the goalkeeping position's going to go. And you know, we a new right back, a new partnership, well, a newish partnership in centre defence with McManus and somebody else, whether it's Hennigan, whether it's, you know, Kennedy or Wang, and Stevie Hamill at the back. You know, Stevie Hamill, you know, Keith Lasley, you know what the guys are going to put in. But I think, as you say, it's going to be important that the front three are in form, and I think that's, you know, where our hopes lie.
Also, aside from the obvious names like Mo, like McDonald, I think whether it is someone from the, you know, from the youth ranks, or it's Cadden maybe moving a bit inside, or it's a new signing, I think whoever it is that McGee picks to replace Pearson with, I think is going to be a big, big decision. You know, McHugh's obviously came into the middle of the park, a defensive-minded midfielder. Lasley's already there. Cadden is, as McGee even says, slightly more wide. So I think kind of agreed on, we do need a central midfielder, someone a wee bit more creative, someone a wee bit more attacking, and if we get that right, whether it is a young player, whether it is a new signing, if we get that right, then I think that will be integral to anything good for this season.
And I suppose the Mark McGee in his first season in Motherwell, he kind of revolutionised in terms of the guys coming back so much sharper, so much fitter. He brought in some really high calibre signings, but then in his second pre-season, he did struggle to find the right type of player, and we did struggle as a result of that. It'll be interesting to see how now he's been able to have some time to get his own guys in, what effect that's going to have on the side, and also the attitude Mark McGee takes as well, where it did very much feel in his last season at the club that he lost a bit of interest, for want of a better expression. So this is going to be a massive year for Mark McGee as well.
I think you're right there as well. You know, this is technically his first pre-season. Obviously, he came in November, whatever it was. His first pre-season with this team. And as you said, he's now starting to put his own stamp on it. We're bringing in players, whereas he's had to deal with Barakos' team beforehand, basically. As you said, the last time it was like night and day between the two teams and the two seasons, the two performances. So it will be interesting to see, but I think he'll get the best out of players, maybe like, you know, young Cadden. He's obviously done well with guys like Laurie Moult, Scott McDonald as well, you know, the tail end of last year. So I'm hoping and thinking it'll be a pretty decent season for us, to be honest with you.
And just to kind of wrap up, I suppose one other significant departure is the departure of Stephen Robinson, who's taken on the Oldham Athletic job. Very strangely assisted by Ian Barraclough, who he assisted at Motherwell. Gordon, he seemed to have a very big influence in how things were going at Fir Park, very highly thought of, a successful part of the Northern Ireland set-up as well. How significant a loss will that be that Robinson has moved on?
Well, I think what speaks volumes for his coaching talent is the way that Mark McGee kept him on without seemingly any hesitation. I know there can be a number of reasons for that, but you see it all the time. A new manager comes in, they try to keep the existing number two, but then they realise, no, I want my own guy in. Mark McGee didn't do that, and it ended up being pretty successful last season. You know, coaches have CVs the same way players do. He goes to the Euros, which is a success in itself, does relatively well at the Euros as well. So his stock was bound to be high, and I suppose it's a shame, and especially the timing of it, that he's gone. Having said that, I would just about stay away from being too upset about it, purely because, as we all know, football's so fickle. And when things weren't going well under Ian Barraclough, I know Ian Barraclough got a lot of blame for it, but there was also a lot of questions about Stephen Robinson as well and the way he handled the players and so on. So it's like anything, when you're losing, you look for excuses, and when you're winning, everything seems rosy. But it will definitely be interesting to see who Mark McGee turns to try and fill that position. I suppose we should watch that with interest over the coming weeks.
Bust, I certainly knows what he likes, or he's certainly taken what he believes to be the best parts from his time at Motherwell and brought on guys like Conor Ripley, Josh Law, Lee Irwin, all in a very short space of time. So he's certainly has a high regard for some of the guys that he has worked with.
Yeah, and to be fair as well, when obviously I think we'd had our goalkeepers in there, Dean Brill had come in already, but when I heard Conor Ripley was coming back out on loan, and I was disappointed that we wouldn't have been in there for him, basically. I think Conor Ripley was a fantastic goalkeeper. But as you say, you know, he's started to bring in to Oldham some guys that he knows he's familiar with, so we all know what he can do as well. Josh Law's maybe not the best football player in the world, but run all day for you, and I think got quite a lot of undeserved stick at Motherwell. And Lee Irwin, again, runs all day for you. His goal scoring record was a bit sus, but you know, he scored a couple of important goals for us. So Stephen Robinson's obviously worked with him well before, knows what they're doing, so good luck to him.
Yeah, Jay, I think Josh Law is one that perhaps divided the support a wee bit, but certainly, and we had the chance to meet him on a few occasions as well, certainly gave his all in his time at the club, played out of position quite regularly, struggled to find his feet in that team that was struggling in his first season at the club, but certainly a good servant who will go with the best wishes of the support.
Well, based on, you know, when it was announced on social media, some of the replies suggest that he doesn't go with the best wishes of the support. I mean, Josh Law for me is a perfect example of just a really good signing for everybody involved. We needed a right back. He came in. He was a consistent, you know, he one of those players that the phrase "does a job" you could probably attribute to. You know, yes, there was the odd game where he would make a mistake, or the odd game that he actually looked pretty decent. But by and large, he was consistent. He did a job. And as you said, he's really committed, really hardworking. And when you're a fan of a club like Motherwell, there's not really a great deal more you can ask for. So that's why I'm certainly going with my best wishes. As you said, we met him a couple of times. Really, really sound guy. You know, I'm sure. It's one of those ones where we needed a right back and we got one, did a job. Oldham obviously need a player, they've got someone. And Josh Law himself has been from, you know, a non-league standard in England to a slightly better standard. So he's so it's a win-win. So he certainly goes with my best wishes, and you know, unfortunately there is the odd person giving it the good riddance pattern on Facebook, you know, showing themselves up to the absolute posters, because at the end of the day, if you can't appreciate the guy who's hard working, I really don't understand what it is you're kind of wooden from Motherwell players.
They basically played in the Drake Artista role behind whoever it was up front, and they scored two goals against Jarman. What a day that was. What a guy.
That didn't work out too well in the end, though, did it?
Well, that wasn't Josh's fault that time.
I'm sure Facebook will try and find a way of blaming him, though. Gordon, thanks very much for giving up your time. I know you've still not actually been able to head home yet, so we'll let you go. But please, let's make this a more regular occurrence. We've really enjoyed having you on.
Nah, listen, thanks very much for having me. Always happy to talk Motherwell, no matter how late it makes me stay in the office. So, not honestly, any time, I mean that. Appreciate it.
Jay Bustard, thanks again, and we'll kick on for the rest of the season now.
Cheers.
No more. Thanks very much, Bob.
You've been listening to the NFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.